Now, if you tuck into a tuna salad or empty a tin to make a mornay for your kids, you might not consider tuna to be a luxury item. But when you see the reverence with which Japanese chefs and consumers treat the mighty fish, you think differently. From a boat off the coast of southern New South Wales to the trading floors of one of the world's biggest fish markets, southern bluefin tuna are a prized haul, guaranteed to make big money in Japan. And for the next few months, people from all over the globe are working day and night while the season lasts. Michael Cavender ventured to the docks on the New South Wales south coast.
Like many small fishing villages, the wharf at Bermagui is often the centre of attraction. People of all ages dangling a line over the edge, others strolling in the sun after enjoying fresh fish and chips cooked at the local co-op. But on this day, those gathered are all mesmerised as two fishing boats moored either side of the wharf unload the spoils of several days at sea.
Once you leave port, you head out to the grounds, which is anywhere from 30 to 70 mile. Once you're there, you set your lines in the morning and then steam back to the other end, and you haul that line, just a small amount of hooks, of 600 hooks, so your fish don't die on line. You've got to keep every fish that you do catch. Then repeat that of an afternoon, so you do two lots of setting and two lots of retrieval each day.
Dan Carter has been in charge of the Mooloolaba-based 23-metre-long straight shooter for the past 5 years. Working under him is a crew of six, three Australians and three Indonesians. Dan is waiting while another Queensland boat is unloading its catch on the other side of the wharf. The bluefin tuna are being winched by their tail from the holds, the sunlight glistening on their silver bodies as they're gently lowered into large bins packed with ice. They'll soon be on a semi-trailer, trucked to a processing plant near Brisbane before being flown to the auction floors in Japan. Dan left Bermagui around 20 years ago. This is the first time he's fished for the bluefin tuna in these waters.
A day in the life of a fisherman, it's very busy. You don't get much sleep. If you like your sleep, you're in the wrong trade. And the cooking gets done. You have one main meal in between when you're setting the lines, where someone is able to go inside and cook a meal for everyone at the end of the setting of the lines before retrieving them. Everyone will sit down and have a meal and just keep the energy up. As it is down here, we on very minimal sleep, but that's why we only do 2-3 days, because your body just shut down from lack of sleep, really.
You're qualified to skipper up to 24 metres. The straight shooter is 23 metres. What's it like skippering a boat like this when we look at it? Some would even think that you're sitting in the cockpit of a plane.
They are very technical these days. There's a lot to them, and not just an engine and a throttle and a steering wheel. There's the electrical side of it. You got all your satellite data that you receive and all your refrigeration. Yeah, there's a lot to it. Not just simple, we'll just go out there, catch a fish. It's a lot to run in the vessel as well.
What's your opinion of tuna itself?
Tuna, I love the tuna, yes. They're really nice with just a bit of soy sauce, and it's quite healthy for you. So,
do you eat any while you're on board?
No, very rarely. Normally go to a sushi shop when we get in and pay a lot of money for it.
And you think, goodness me, I probably caught that.
I do, and I think, what am I doing paying this money for it?
The skippers and crew are paid by the catch. This catch, they're averaging around 70 kilograms cleaned and gutted. While Australians may not be big bluefin tuna eaters, the wild-caught bluefin tuna is much sought after by the Japanese. They argue the fat content is much better than the smaller tuna found in South Australian waters and weighing around 35 kilograms. It's the yen for the yen that has Craig Volker work as a deckhand on the Emnicus.
Well, I originally started as a fisherman about 20 years ago, and then as the years went on, sort of lifestyle changes, I went into the building trade, and now I've come back longlining. The whole industry's changed massively.
What is it about longlining that attracts you?
The lifestyle, being at sea, sunsets, sunrises, catching fish.
Lifestyle, you're out at sea for about 3 days at a time, in this case off Bermagui. You're getting about 1 to 2 hours sleep a night. You're wet, you're pulling in fish, you turn up at Bermagui Wharf, unload the fish onto ice. What is it about that sort of lifestyle?
It's something that you can't explain. It's the environment, being at sea, you know, in rough weather or good weather, whatever it could be. You go to places inside yourself that you didn't know you had. You dig deep, you know, you work as a team. The skipper will push you to your limits, and it's a challenge.
While the Australians such as Craig and the Indonesians on straight shooter spend years as deckhands, a smaller, locally based tuna boat moored nearby is about to head out to sea again. On it is Swedish backpacker Anders Christensen. He has finished university and is on the other side of the globe trying something different before heading home to apply his tertiary education.
I like it. For me, it's not hard at all. If it's really windy, it could be a bit difficult. I like it. I love the action. It's action all the time.
What sort of action is it?
You can go from nothing. You could just pull hooks, nothing at all, and then just one of a sudden you got three bluefish in the line, and you just need to gaff them, clean them. Everything happens so fast. 0 to 100 in 2 seconds. That's what I like.
That's Swedish backpacker Anders Christensen getting ready to pull in the bluefin tuna lines on the New South Wales south coast. And that report from Michael Kavanagh from the wharves of Bermagui. Well, let's go right up north now, where, like the tuna fishery, the great Aussie prawn fishery needs a lot of looking after if it's to be sustainable. Deckhands on board fishing boats in the Gulf of Carpentaria are playing a critical role in this. The northern prawn fishery is one of only 7 in Australia to have achieved the blue tick from the Marine Stewardship Council, the most widely respected and accepted global standard for the certification of wild-caught seafood. It involved the fishery being assessed against a range of benchmarks, and in this particular instance, this was helped by the quality of the data being collected by crew members. For them, being on the boat means more than catching fish. It means helping to manage the future of the prawn stocks in this remote and valuable part of the ocean. Our reporter Charlie McKillop was in Cairns in far north Queensland as the boats headed back to the Gulf for the tiger prawn season.
A net bursting at the seams full of prawns is a sight every deckhand on every prawn trawler is excited to see. Cherie Carton's been fishing in the Gulf of Carpentaria now for 20 years, and when those nets are spilled onto the sorting tray, it's not only prawns she's looking for.
Well, yeah, I'm really happy when we get a big bag of prawns, but I must admit that if I see one of my particularly interesting species of sea snakes hanging out of the side of that cod end, that's going to grab my attention a lot more, and getting that snake out before it gets hurt and thrown back over the side. This just makes the job a lot more interesting. I don't think I would have stayed in fishing for 20 years if I hadn't become involved in the Crew Member Observer program. It adds a whole new dimension. 4 months, 4.5 months is a long time to be at sea. And when you're tigering, tiger prawn season, you work nights, so you have your days to yourself. It just adds a whole new level, like a whole extra level.
So we marked that we've checked for the turtles, sawfish, sea snakes, cygnathids, at-risk rays and at-risk crustaceans.
The Crew Member Observer program's been running in the northern prawn fishery for the past 10 years. Cherie's been there from the start and is now involved in training other CMOs in the correct way to collect and record data.
You write down the times of the shots, and then on the back, do an estimate of the size.
Yep.
And
if you can get the sex,
if you can get a photo, yeah, if you can get the sex, they're pretty easy to sex. But with juvenile.
My name's Josh, and I'll be fishing on Lady Serene, and I'll be collecting data for Soro and AFMA, and I'm looking forward to actually getting out there and learning something different and helping out the fishery.
You've done the induction course in the last couple of days. How has that prepared you for what you are about to do?
It's made me understand a lot more about the fishery, and in past seasons, whatever comes up, usually you don't pay any attention to it at all, what it is or whether it's threatened or endangered or whatever, and it just goes back over the side and that's the end of that, and you just carry on fishing, you know. So it adds a new aspect to fishing, really, for me anyway.
Why is that something that you're seeking?
I don't know, it's just something that's always been in the back of my mind, sort of helping out with this sort of thing, you know. And yeah, and I've been given the opportunity, and I can't wait to do it.
It's a co-management success story that's being held up as an example of how fishers can play a meaningful role in the decisions about their fishery.
I've definitely noticed that in the last 10 years there's been quite a big change in attitude amongst people that were nervous that we were providing information that was just going to be used to shut down the fishery by, you know, quote-unquote greenies. And now people realise that that information is really valuable to make informed decisions about the fishery and to present evidence to the general public or to the governing bodies that in a lot of areas we're seeing an increase in our prawn catches through lowering the fishing effort by, you know, lowering the number of boats and out there. It's improving. It's becoming a more viable fishery. And if we weren't collecting the data that we are, they wouldn't be able to see a lot of that sort of things. You know, they see that we're not damaging the population of certain kinds of fish or other crustaceans. In fact, in some places they're thriving. And if we don't collect this data, then they just don't realise that.
And it's being recognised not only by industry, but the scientists and fishery managers are on board as well. Gary Fry works for the Oceans and Atmosphere section of the Commonwealth Scientific Industry Research Organisation, otherwise known as CSIRO.
Data is expensive to collect when you're out on board a vessel. With crew member observers, you train up. We got 10 crew member observers this year, and to get that kind of data from the whole fishing season, it's invaluable. We couldn't do that without being very expensive.
How does it compare with other ways that the CSIRO have been able to monitor the sustainability of stocks and the information that they need to know about one of Australia's most remote fisheries, the northern prawn fishery?
We have in past gone out and carried out surveys, scientific surveys, where we actually either charter boats or use our own vessels and put scientific crew on there and fish in a similar manner to the commercial fishers. We use scientific observers on chartered vessels or actually fishing boats. So we're collecting data, I guess, as the fishers are doing their job. This form of, I guess, data collection where we're using CMOs, you collect a lot more data. We validate the data when it comes in by looking at the animals they're collecting. So we identify each one because they collect photos from each animal they record. We also do a sort of validation of their data, you know, comparing catch rates that they collect when they're out collecting the information and what we've collected in our scientific surveys from the same area. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to validate their data, and it's a unique opportunity for actually the fishers to collect their own data. We couldn't do that to that extent.
So it's much more than just a feel-good exercise for the industry. It's genuinely going to extract data that will be used in a meaningful way in terms of the future management of the fishery.
Yeah, that's right. It's when the crew member observers collect that data, the industry sends that data to us. Once we verify that data, we use it in running risk assessments and sustainability analysis on that data to see to look at catch rates over time, over the last few years. You know, if the catch rates are steady, that's a good indication that nothing's changing. If the catch rates are going down, you know, there's scenarios where it's either the fishery has changed regions where the high effort is, or the animals are decreasing in numbers. But, you know, till we know that, we need to verify the data and look at the fishery patterns.
There's no risk of these deckies doing you scientists out of a job then?
Well, no, I think I'd like to see it as a collaboration to get, a lot of good, robust data.
That's Gary Fry from the CSIRO at a workshop in Cairns for new crew member observers as they headed back to sea for the start of the tiger prawn season in the Gulf of Carpentaria. And you can find out more about that program online at abc.net.au/rural. Just search for the photo of Cherie Carton with one of the many interesting creatures of the deep she photographs and records before returning it to the ocean.